This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to the podcast. I am a dental division director at the CPA firm of Ide Bailey. I'm located in our offices in Tustin, California, and our world broadcast studios are here in my office in Laguna Beach. And you might have heard in the past month or so, we're going to go live with this podcast on August 13th. You might have heard that on Independence Day, July 4th, President Donald Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I have a copy of it. I haven't read the whole thing. I probably won't read the whole thing unless I have some amnesia issues, because it is 880 pages long. It covers a whole bunch of stuff. And what I want to do today is, with my good friend and colleague, Don Watson, who is a partner at Ide Bailey in our Tustin office, as well as our director of dental practices. Don's a 30-year CPA, so between the two of us, you get 70 years of CPA experience on this recording. We're going to talk about the major tax provisions of the Big Beautiful Bill Act and how it's going to affect you and your practice and how it's going to affect your pocketbook or wallet or whatever it is you carry your money in. And so we'll get to Don in a moment. A lot of stuff to cover in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. I want to thank my wonderful sponsor, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have a new dental marketing company called DDS Media Pro. And I have seen what they do. It's pretty amazing. Artificial intelligence. Lorraine Kent and her team have been doing this for 20 plus years. And they are able to do some things with marketing and getting people to see what you're looking at. So I would give them a call about their dental marketing company. I would take a look at their 140 CE courses that they provide at a very reasonable cost, and their clinical content in their magazine is amazing. If you open up the magazine and you see, open up to page, I guess that would be page one or page three, wherever they put me, you'll see our podcast on there, www.decisionsindentistry.com. Again, we're recording this in right in the middle of summer, getting now down towards extension time for us CPAs. So if you are one of these folks that have said to your CPA, oh, just extend my tax return and I'll send you everything later. Well, it's now later. So please be kind to your CPAs. If you are not getting good service from your CPA, they're not returning your phone calls. They do not understand how much production should be in the hygiene department as compared to your dental department for you, the dentist. Give us a call. And actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you Don Watson's phone number today, because he is on the call with us, and he is the director of our dental practices group, and our clients love working with him. His email address is D as in David Watson, Watson, at Eide Bailey, Eidebailly.com. And his direct line is 657-279-3273. Also, folks, be watching your emails. We'll be getting stuff out and be listening to the podcast. We will be doing a full-blown webinar on the Big Beautiful Tax Act. We just haven't figured out the dates yet as to when we're going to be doing them. We'll get back to you with that shortly. Also, Don and I will be doing a year-end tax planning webinar with the Orange County Dental Society. We're doing two more series with the Orange County Dental Society. We're doing an hour of clinical dentistry sponsored by Parametrics, Dr. Sherilyn Sheets and her team, Dr. Christina Doe, Dr. Jean Wu. They're going to be giving high-level lectures on clinical dentistry involving cracks and teeth. And our next two webinars, which are in September and then November 12th, we're going to have Dr. Eric Johnson, who's going to talk about wellness. He's an expert on that. It's really good stuff. And then Don and I will be doing our year-end tax update on November 12th. So if you want information on that, you can get a hold of Don. You can get a hold of me at 657-279-3243 or awiederman@eidebailly.com.
Be sure to check out our new Eide Bailly podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right, we got a lot to tell you about this new tax act. I think in general, it's really, really good for dentists. There were stuff that wasn't good, but they took it out. So Don Watson, as I mentioned, is the director of dental practices at Eide Bailly's Tustin office. Don is a good friend of mine. We do a lot of work together. We are big sports fans, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. So Don Watson, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Art. Great to be with you again.
Well, the good news is this comes out August 13th, so college football season will be here shortly. I believe that you have a particular affiliation with one or two football teams you seem to like. What would those be?
Well, being we're in August already, it's nice to know that at the end of this month, we start seeing some of the pigskin come out on the TV again. So, yeah, I like to follow Alabama football and Marshall University.
Or you are a graduate of Marshall, and you.
I am.
I remember you were born in the state of Alabama. So,
out of what?
Yeah. So, you and I have been to one or two football and baseball and basketball games together, and that will continue. So, as much as I'd love to talk to you all day about baseball, football, and basketball, we're not going to do that. So, let me start out, folks, talking about an overview of this is H.R. 1, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. That is the legal name. What it did is it did several things. It permanently extended the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions, which were passed. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act were passed during President Donald Trump's first term in December of 2017. They were set to expire at the end of 2025. So we'll talk about that. They were extended. And by the way, whenever we say today that something is extended permanently, do know that nothing is permanent when it comes to federal law, especially federal tax law. Don and I have been doing this, again, a combination of 70 years. He's been a CPA for 30 years, and I've been a CPA for 40 years. So we know that nothing is permanent. This law gave $150 billion for immigration and border security, $150 billion increase in defense spending. We will talk about this. It eliminated most energy tax incentives and emphasized a shift to fossil fuel production in this country. approximately 12% cuts in Medicaid and what's called SNAP, which is the food stamps program, which include new work requirements for persons on Medicaid. It increases the federal debt ceiling by $5 trillion, which will, for a while, keep us away from that cliff that we go off of every 6 months, it seems, where if we don't add to the debt ceiling, the government goes into default. So we have $5 trillion here. Now, while there is disagreement between Republicans and Democrats, and everybody who listens to this podcast and has for the last 6.5 years knows, I do not talk politics. So I will not be talking politics today. But while there is disagreement between Republicans and Democrats, the Congressional Budget Office and Tax Foundation does project that this legislation will add about $3 trillion to our national debt over the next decade. President Trump and the Republicans say, well, no, that's not right because they're not taking into account all the growth that's going to come. So that remains to be seen. Also be aware, folks, that as of now, California has not conformed to any of these changes and may very well not do that. So let's get started and talk about, so I want to just share that in this podcast, folks, we will not be able to cover every single provision. I only have a little over an hour in the podcast. When we do the 2-hour webinar, we will get a lot more into the weeds on a lot of this. We're not going to be able to cover everything. The point of this is call your CPA. There's a lot of things that you need to talk to him or her about. And again, if you don't have a dental CPA, give us a call because that's all we do every single day. So, you know, Don, let's start the discussion that you and I both know that all the provisions of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they were permanently extended. Tell us a little bit about the rates and what happened to the rates and give us an example of how that's going to work, for the dentists.
So for past 8 years, we've been working with 7 particular rates. And most are familiar with the fact that their tax liability is going to come from one of these rates or a couple of these rates being multiplied by their taxable income, which there's a lot of factors going taxable income. But the rate seems to be one of the biggest things that people talk about, you know, even though there's all these other factors. After these 8 years were up at the end of 2025, the rates were going to go back to where they were previously. And in most cases, 6 of those 7 brackets were going to be increased anywhere between 2 and 3-ish%. So as you can imagine, when you have that multiplied by a certain level of income, that would add up pretty quickly. And probably the best way to quantify something like this would be that, you know, if you were working with somebody that had a taxable income of, say, $300,000, yeah, which would be after all their eligible deductions, that if you took those tax brackets that were going to be applied after this year, and you did not change them, do anything about them, you probably would have had a tax liability somewhere around $74,000. But by them signing this into law and keeping with the rates that we know as of today, that was going to end up with something in that similar fact pattern with a tax liability of about $59,000, about a 5% swing or $15,000. So simply this bill in itself, not counting any of the other provisions that we'll get into, is just going to keep that person in that kind of situation at a $15,000 to a $15,000 benefit where they wouldn't have been previously if nothing was done.
And that's right. And by the way, folks, just know that these rates, and again, you know, Don and I have been doing this a long time, and we've gone through rates in the 80s and the 90s. I mean, rates got up as high. I mean, they used to have this earned income rate when I was starting doing taxes, Don, back when the dinosaurs ruled the earth. And I think Bear Bryant was your football coach at Alabama back then. Anyway, so the rates got as high. They used to have an earned income rate that was as high as 70%. So these rates right now are about as low as I've seen them. So they're pretty good for everybody. So the rates are down. They're going to stay the same. Now, let's talk about itemized deductions. Because remember, doctors, you know, your tax liability is calculated. You figure out what's your income, how much you make from your practice, how much you make from investments, real estate, partnerships. And then you subtract itemized deductions, and then you get to taxable income. Well, itemized deductions, there's also this thing called a standard deduction. So, Don, talk a little bit about how the standard deduction works and how, you know, we'll get a little bit ahead of ourselves by telling about the SALT deduction increase. But talk about how the standard deduction works.
But yeah, before the Tax Act 8 years ago, you had a couple of extra opportunities on your Schedule A where you do itemized deductions to get yourself into a better situation of itemizing. Currently, you still get to take your interest on your home mortgage, and you still get to do things with your medical expenses. Those didn't have a truly big change. What really changed was the limitation on your state and local taxes, and they took away your employee business deductions. When you take away things like that, then itemization became harder. So for many people, the standard deduction took over as being the most beneficial way of applying one of those two options. And over time, this number has gotten to be pretty good. It's coming out of a $30,000 number, and now it's going to be going up to $31,500. So for those who maybe rent and don't have a home mortgage, maybe don't have a lot of charity going on in their world at the moment, the standard deduction is a simple way to take a fairly decent number to offset against your income.
So, you know, and one thing on the standard deduction is, so we have a lot of listeners because we're based in California. So for California, for our doctors making $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $600,000 a year, they're probably going to pay enough in state income tax to get to the $40,000. We'll get into the SALTER in a minute. But if you're in a state, there's 9 states in the country that do not have a state income tax, or you're in a state that is very low income tax, or maybe you're just starting a practice, you could be down there. So one of the things, Don, we talk about, right, is, you know, let's say that you're in the, you know, standard deduction, and maybe you have a total of maybe $10,000 or $15,000 in state taxes that you're going to get to deduct under this new limit, and maybe your house is paid for, and, you know, and then maybe you have an opportunity to make a big charitable donation. Talk a little bit about how, if you're in the standard deduction, how you might want to look at maybe bunching charitable contributions.
Yeah, so there's a couple things on the itemized deductions you probably have a little bit more control over. And as Art said, sometimes the payment of taxes, they're due on certain particular dates, so they go out. You pay your mortgage on a particular day, so interest is what it is. But the two things that you have maybe a little bit more control over are the medical side, but more so the charitable contributions. So if you've made commitments to your church, your school, whatever it might be, perhaps you're getting very close to exceeding that standard deduction, call it 31.5. But perennially or annually, you are always butting up against that number, maybe in the upper $20,000 range. So you never get to take, you know, maybe advantage of, say, the donation side. You could hold off a little bit and towards the beginning of the subsequent year, delaying those particular contributions from the end of the year to the beginning of the next year. And then likewise, as you get to the end of the next year, maybe you accelerate a few. And that way, in a given tax year, where you might have given $15,000 each year, tax year-wise, you might be given $30,000 total in that year. So that along with your other items, itemizations, you now find yourself in excess of a $31,500 number and give yourself an excess benefit that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
So here's a perfect example, and this was actually one that Don called me on and told me about on one of our common clients. So we have a doctor, sold his practice 3-4 years ago. We still do his tax return. He comes to us and says, so Art, I've been approached by my university to make a donation to their stadium fund, to their expansion of their stadium fund. And it was going to be a $10,000 a year donation for 5 years. Now, this is about 2 years ago before any of this big, beautiful bill happened. And I said, okay, so Doc, here's the deal. You know, you get $10,000 for the state and local taxes. And again, this was old law. His house was free and clear. And so now he's got $10,000. So if he donates $10,000 every year for 5 years, assuming this law doesn't change, again, we know it did a month ago, but assuming it didn't, he would get no benefit because his standard deduction was bigger. So what Don told him to do, which I thought was brilliant, Don said, listen, can you make the whole thing this year? And he said, yeah, I can. I said, why don't you do that? Because if you don't, you'll get zero benefit because you'll be in the standard deduction. Remember that, Don? We talked about that. That was a really good thing that you did for that client, among many other things you do for clients that we work on. Okay, so that's the standard deduction.
And now, just to expand on that one too, Arp, that was also another area that would have reverted back to a lesser amount if this year had closed. So the bill re-extended out this advanced deduction, this excess amount that we wouldn't have had otherwise. So another pro.
Right, exactly. All right. Now, you also, folks, might have heard that President, and again, remember, we don't talk politics. I'm going to wear a little thing on my, a little sign on my neck. I don't talk politics when I do my podcast. President Trump, when he was campaigning for president back last year, was talking about eliminating taxation on Social Security. So right now, you pay tax on 85% on your federal return of your Social Security benefits. Well, they tried to do that, but something happened. So talk about the new exemption we have for seniors and kind of what happened with all of that.
Yeah, I believe if I understood right, the way the law is written, you're now allowed to take away the taxing of Social Security. But what you're allowed to do is create other areas of the return function to discount it some, to offset it some. So what has come up is that for a 65-year-old person, $6,000 can be used as a starting point for deduction or a deduction against that income, $12,000 if you're a couple. But one of the caveats in there is there's going to be an income phase out. So while you might start having that ability, if you make enough money, then what they're deeming is that that benefit should get reduced so that you don't get the full amount of that benefit. And it basically goes from about $150,000 starting point for married up to $350,000. So you get this $200,000 range where it goes from $6,000 down to zero. But it's something that's going to be around starting in 2025 and go for 4 years all the way through 2028.
So this is the first point that we're going to make, that Don and I are going to make, that has to do with taxable income limitations and adjusted gross income limitations. Many of the provisions in this bill are going to phase out for doctors whose incomes are over $300,000 or $350,000 or $400,000 or $500,000. We're going to talk about the SALT deduction in a minute here. So these are reasons, doctors, that you really want to be able to take advantage of a lot of these provisions by getting your adjusted gross income under $400,000, $350,000, $300,000. How do you do that? There's three really big ways you can do that. One is making sure that your family members, your children, mom, dad, whoever's working in the practice is on the payroll. Number two is retirement plan contributions. You can make big, big donations to that. We're not getting into that today. And the third one is equipment, which we're going to talk about with the bonus depreciation changes. Oh, so again, the whole thing, and we'll tie this up at the end too, is you want to get your income down because if you do that, you'll get to take advantage of these things like this, you know, $12,000 deduction for seniors. And the next one, which is the state and local tax deduction. So in 2017, living in California, you know, back then, you know, everything was great. They passed this new tax law. And I look at this, I said, you're going to limit my state income taxes. And we're talking about state income taxes, like to the state of California, state of Illinois, wherever, and my property taxes and my car license. $10,000. I was crying out of both eyes when I saw that. That was really not good. And it's been that way for about 7 years. Well, you know, things have changed, right, Don? So what did they do with this state and local tax deduction?
in this.
This actually probably was one of the biggest points of contention going back between both sides of the House and the Senate, of trying to figure out what was going to be the right configuration that they could each live with, because they had to answer to their constituents and their home states, some of which either had no tax, had a high tax, or somewhere in the middle. So what they landed on was a $40,000 number. And they said, so instead of having a $10,000 limitation, we'll work with a $40,000 limitation. However, similar to what the old Peace rules were, that's, I think, Senator Peace years ago, which had a caused a phase-out. Again, you make more money, you tend to get a reduced benefit in many areas of a tax return. This one is now going to look at your $40,000 and say, all right, if you make more than $500,000, and this is modified adjusted gross income, don't get me wrong, we're not talking about gross income, but modified adjusted, which has a lot of components to it. Once you start exceeding that $500,000, you could go down, or you will go down. And it's basically so that $40,000 could end up going away back to what you were used to. So let's use the phase out range of $100,000, which is what the law has. It will go down 30% of that number. So 30% of $100,000, you will take that $30,000 right off of the 40, and you're back down to the $10,000 that you're used to over the past 7 years. Even if you make $200,000, you will not go below that $10,000. So there is always going to be the floor of $10,000. If you have at least paid $10,000 in taxes, those combination of taxes Art mentioned, you will always get at least $10,000. It's just a matter of whether you can get more than that, and your income will be a driver of what that final number will be. And this is going to be something that's in effect for the next 5 years, starting with 2025.
Right. So this is good. You know, you'll save, if you were getting $10,000, like I was getting and everybody else probably on this call was getting, if you're in a 35% marginal bracket, remember we talked about these tax brackets, 35% is the second highest, which is where I think if Don and I were to go through all the tax returns that are done in our office, that's probably the highest rate that, I mean, some are higher, some are lower, but that'd be the median, probably the median or the average rate that we'd see. So if you take an additional $30,000 deduction times 35% marginal rate, you're going to save $10,500 that goes in your pocket because of the law change between 24 and 25. Now, there's another thing that they did when this whole SALT thing came up. And I don't know who came up with it, but I think it was brilliant. And what they did is they came up with this workaround. Now, a lot of our clients come up with workarounds to paying taxes by paying stuff through their practice. And hopefully nobody at the IRS is listening to this. That maybe, I don't know, maybe shouldn't be deducted. But this was a legal, legitimate workaround. And I know that in the discussions about this new tax bill, there was talk about getting rid of it. And, you know, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the ADA, the AMA, everybody and his mother were saying, hey, this is going to hurt small business. So talk a little bit about how this workaround works and what they ended up doing with it. And it's important because doctors, if you're a pass-through entity and you've got a decent income and you're not doing what Don is about to talk to you about, you need to call us because it's tens of thousands of dollars in taxes.
Yeah. So when the law changed 7 years ago, what some of the states were trying to do to combat it was find a way to create or take advantage of a deduction that fell under tax law, but still gave them the same benefit also at the state level, like a tax estimate or withholding would be. So the pass-through entity tax came up, and I want to say it began up in the Northeast. I can't remember if it was Connecticut or one of the states, but we are now around 30 states, give or take, that have such a program, all the little nuances to them. But what it was meant to be was the state tax could be paid at the business level, and it fell under federal law that it was an eligible deduction or federal taxes. So instead of this happening individually with your W-2 with a tax estimate, your company is making the payment and it becomes a deduction that will go against your K-1 income. So now you're getting to have the federal tax benefit because this amount was being done at a different level than you individually, where you couldn't take a benefit on your personal return. The business was taking it, netting it, before that income even hit your personal return. So if you are in a state, and we're in California, so probably a predominant amount of our clients are exposed to having this opportunity, we try to get them all qualified if they're making enough income to make it worthwhile, because there is a lot of management of the process between making estimated payments, trying to get into the right year for the deduction, cleaning it up again when the return is done, and then starting all over again, rinse, repeat. But if you're in a state that has this program, you know, make sure that you're working with your advisor to make sure that you're at least addressing it. You may be able to explain to you why it doesn't make sense to do, but at least make sure you're talking about it and see if you should be implementing it.
And the higher your income as a dentist, and this general dentists have multiple offices or general dentists that are just killing it in their practice. This would be nice. So here's an example. So let's say that Arthur Wiederman DDS Inc. is an S Corp, and I've got taxable income of $1 million. Now, this is after Dr. Wiederman took a W-2 salary of $300,000. And Don, I mean, this is something that you beat into your clients' heads. If you're an S Corp, you've got to take a reasonable salary, right?
Yeah, and it's a good place to digress. That reasonable salary has been at the forefront of our careers for 30 and 40, as Art said. It's not very common. You get challenged by the IRS, but it's something that we hear about in every educational course we go to, just because it's talked about constantly, and you've got to make sure that to put yourself in a position of not having to defend it. Yes, measure whether you're being paid the right amount for the work you do.
Now, if you are a startup practice and you're breaking even, we can live without you taking a salary because you're probably not taking any distributions out of your practice. But if you're making $750,000, $750,000 a year, and you're taking a $10,000 salary, which we've seen, that's a red flag. So in this example, California, let's say I'm a California S corporation. Don's going to have you make a payment of $93,000, 9.3%. It's going to be different every state, which is going to reduce Dr. Wiederman's S-Corp income from $1 million to $907,000, which is going to save me 37% in federal income tax, $34,410. So that's the workaround, is whereas I only get $10,000 as an itemized deduction. If I take it against my S-Corp income, it comes off my S-Corp income, reduces my adjusted gross income, which is how they figure all of these limitations, saves me $34,000 in tax, and I get to take that $93,000 as a credit that I paid personal income tax to the state of $93,000. It's a big deal. So if your accountant is not having you make these payments, so we're in August right now, okay, Don? So how does this work? When do they have to make this payment?
So if we just stick with California, because like you said, there's going to be different amounts, dates, percentages that apply to any of the other states that do such a program. But for California, by June 15th, and there's been some lifting of that or some relief that they're going to offer for this year, first time in the past 4 years. But typically, you're supposed to make your estimated payment by June 15th to qualify yourself for the program. And to qualify for the program, it was the higher of two numbers, $1,000 or 50% if you participated in the program in the previous year. So if you did that, you availed yourself to be in the program for that year. Then what we would do is we'd look at the tax planning at the end of the year to see, should there be any more dollars paid in? You didn't have to pay them in then, but what the play was to get the dollars in by the end of the year so we could take advantage of it that tax year. So if in your example, you had $93,000 and say it was your first year, you put $1,000 in June 15th, I could have you pay $92,000 now, or I could have you pay it when you extend or file your return the subsequent year. You'll still get $93,000 of deduction, but you'll have to wait till the following tax year to benefit from the $92,000. So in tax planning, which you know a lot of our clients enjoy going through, we would recommend paying the $92,000 so that in 2025, for instance, you would get the time value of that deduction 1 year earlier than if you delayed it.
Right. Okay. Let's take a quick second, Don. Talk a little bit about what you do with clients at Eide Bailly. I mean, how many dentists you work with, and then I want you to give out your contact information. Doctors, you know, I truly believe, you know, that's one of the reasons I formed the Academy of Dental CPAs, of which we're a member firm 25 years ago. You want to work with dental specialists. You want to work with a dental-specific attorney, a dental-specific contractor, and architect. By the way, we're going to have a great, my first two-part series in 6.5 years is going to be Joe and Mike Panisi, dental brothers and dental architect and contractor, talking about building an office. That's going to be the next podcast that's going to be published, the next two after this one, because I wanted to get this one out as soon as possible so you have the most amount of time. So talk a little bit about what you do, and then you'll give out your contact information. If you have any questions about any of this, Don would be happy to take a little time and share what he knows about it, which is a lot.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of what I know is came from you, Art, so I appreciate that.
No, don't say that.
So in Tustin, I have a team of 10 people, myself included, and we take care of about 150 dentists. And I would say traditionally, the work that we're doing here is twofold. We're helping clients take care of their business records and take care of their taxes. And business records are so important because they help you manage your practice and helps us have insight to what's going on and give you any tidbits of input to do anything better or differently. And then we do take care of the taxes, and that's what the other part of your records are for. You got to file your tax returns at the end of the year. But what we're hoping for is to have those numbers in front of us so that we can do the most with them and cut off as much in tax as possible. It's not that it's a bad word, taxes, but we certainly wouldn't pay any more than required by governmental law. But so between taxes, record keeping of your books, and we take care of financial reports, we do tax planning at the end of the year to walk through what the year is looking like. And then we also will help you take care of 1099s, property tax returns, and salary schedules to make sure that you're starting off the year the right way. But that's probably what our bread and butter is, but we do a lot of things with regards to cost segs. If you're building out a practice, if you need help discussing retirement plans, things of that sort.
Yeah, transitions, bringing in an associate. I mean, if there's anything on the business side of dentistry that you need, even if you're not a client, give Don a call. We have resources in every single facet of finance and management, which is the name of the podcast. Anything you need, if we can't do it at Eide Bailly, we can find it for you. So Don, quickly give out your contact information because we got a lot more to cover.
Yeah, sure. So real quick, as Art mentioned, my direct line at the office is 657-279-3273. And you can reach me email by dwatson@eidebailly.com. We do have a landing page going through our website. So if you go through the medical practices side and dental specialty, you'll see a few of us in there. And feel free to look around and give me a shout if you'd like to discuss anything.
Sounds great. Okay. Yep. Charitable contribution rules, Don. Some changes there. Why don't you go over that with our listeners?
Yeah. So a couple of things going on there. We talked about itemized deductions. And a few years back, I remember this rule and it seemed to just go away. But it was where if you were an itemizer, the IRS was trying to instill or motivate people to give to charity. And they thought, well, wait a second, I'm going to give the charity, but I'm not going to get a benefit. And we talked about that bunching concept. Then maybe they would be disincentivized. Well, what they're going to do coming up for this year is that on top of your standard deduction, if you decided to give $1,000 to the church or say $2,000 if you're married, you can add that on top of the standard deduction. So basically augment it. So your standard deduction really would just be about anything that would be encompassed under that area, the taxes, the mortgage interest, but you would get that automatically. If you want to give something, you could add to it. There was also a limitation in the past that of what you gave, you would max out at 60% of your adjusted gross income. So a lot of people would tithe maybe to the church. Well, if you had certain other events going on in your financial world, you may have made $200,000, but you might have had things that caused a loss. You know, could have been an investment or a rental property or something that brought that number down. So you run the calculation. What you gave may not be entirely deductible, but this limitation is now going to be a permanent aspect of the charitable contributions. And a new thing for this year is going to be there's a floor, and I will probably akin this to like what you would see in medical expenses. For many years, you had to give more than, say, 7.5% of your income to get your first dollar benefit in the medical side. What is going to happen now is for charity, it's got to be more than 0.5% of your income before you get your first dollar of benefit. Time a new twist, huh, Art?
Yeah. So, and that's effective 2026, right? If I remember correctly.
Yes, that is correct.
So here's a little tax planning thing for you guys. You're going to make a, you're going to lose. So here's like an example that we would have. Let's say in Dr. Don Watson made 30,000 donations and he itemizes his adjusted gross income is 500,000 for 2026. So he's going to lose 0.5% of 500,000 or $2,500. So his donations are going to go from 30,000 to 27,500. So, Don, we might want to think about accelerating donations into 2025. We have the $40,000 SALT limit, so we're probably going to be itemizing and not using standard deduction in the high income states. So, maybe consider pushing donations into 2025 to avoid this losing a 0.5%. And if you have a big income event, doctors, you're selling a practice, you're selling a piece of real estate, maybe you have $1 million, $2 million, you have $3 million of adjusted gross income, you could lose up to, $10,000-$15,000 of these deductions. So think about accelerating your donations into 2025 to avoid this. They did come up with some stuff on disaster relief. Now, we all know the horrible, horrible day here in California of January 6, 2025. The cities of Altadena and Pacific Palisades. I'm, by the way, very proud to say that Ide Bailey made a donation to both the foundations of the San Gabriel Valley Dental Society and the West Los Angeles Dental Society, which went directly to support the dentists who either lost their offices or lost their homes. That was something that we were very proud that we did. So the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act back in 2017 eliminated as an itemized deduction personal casualty losses. So your house burned down, it's worth $2 million and you only got $1 million in insurance. You had a loss of $1 million, right? So you would get that deduction minus, I think there was a $100 floor and then 10% of your income. Well, they took that all away with the tax cuts. So there is no personal itemized deduction for casualty loss, except for in disaster areas in certain instances. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act extended the period of time to include these losses from the Pacific Palisades and Altadena fires in January. And taxpayers who suffered federally declared disaster losses during 24 and 25 in Arkansas, Kentucky, Missouri, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and West Virginia. I could be like one of those guys that talks 100 miles an hour on those commercials. I tried that my best. They get special benefits. So California dentists who had personal casualty losses from the Pacific Palisades and Altadena fires from losing your home would be the biggest example, can deduct losses, and they're not subject to the 10% of adjusted gross income limit. And it's only above $500, but that's nothing. And then they can take the personal casualty loss even if they use the standard deduction. So doctors, if you were, God forbid, affected by these fires or any other disaster in any part of the country, give us a call and you may be able to go back and get a bunch of money from the government. All right, let's talk about Section 199A. I know that's near and dear to your heart and my heart that we talk about.
I don't. Well, I want to back. I'm just going to backtrack for one thing before we skip
out of charitable
contributions.
Sure.
I did want to mention that we do get a number of our mature clients in the audience, and if that when you have property that is probably going to be a very low tax base, your property taxes aren't super high. So even though it's going up to $40,000, you may not have a lot you're paying, and you probably don't have a loan on your house. So if you feel charitably inclined and you don't think that the $2,000 number that we mentioned over and above your standard deduction is going to be super beneficial, but you're ready to give five or 10, the qualified charitable deduction or donation is out there so that if you're taking money out of your retirement account, you can put money directly to a charity from there. And what that does, it neutralizes or nets with that number when it hits your first page of your tax return. So that way you're getting more of the realistic effect of your giving versus hoping to get it through the Schedule A itemized deduction side, which may come through at all or some, but probably not in full. So right. Just keep that in mind that exists out there as the qualified charitable donation.
Yeah, and that's it for a lot of you. That's if you're taking required minimum distributions. Say you're going to take $100,000 out of your IRA, and you don't need the money. That's a nice problem to have, right? But you have to take it because you're over the age of having to take RMDs. But you don't want to increase your adjusted gross income because of all these limitations. You can make this qualified donation that Don is talking about. It's just kind of just flows through, and it doesn't increase your income. You don't pay tax on that $100,000, but you don't get the deduction on your itemized, and that's what we're talking about. We can talk about that. So 199A, Don. Talk about what that is and what the government did and how it works.
So when this first came around, there was a change in the corporate tax rate. But the corporate tax rate is only a tax rate that's applied to corporations that pay tax, not an S-corp, now partnerships, and so forth. So the 199A said, since we can't change a tax rate, what we're going to do is create a deduction, a percent of a deduction that might equalize that when you put this income on your personal tax return, it would give you relatively similar effect as if you were paying tax the way C corporation, as we would call it. So now, with the One Big Beautiful Bill, you will have this as a permanent, as I said, permanent until some other law changes it, but there is no sunsetting of it as originally planned. So continuing on for this year, you will have this 20% deduction with certain stipulations, but it will be part of our world for a little while longer.
Now, again, there's another phase out here. So the phase out for married joint goes between $400,000 and $550,000. So another reason, keep your income under $400,000, i.e. kids on the payroll, retirement plan, equipment purchasing. We're going to talk about that.
The great thing here is the range has expanded. In years past, even though it got indexed, the range used to be $100,000. So basically for every $1,000, you lost 1% of that benefit. Once you hit that $100,000, you lost 100% of the benefit. Now it's based upon a $150,000 spread. So you have a little bit more wiggle room before you lose everything. But as Art said, when we do tax planning, we would keep an eye on how the numbers came together and see if we can get the full benefit when possible.
And a lot of it is literally, Don can literally sit there when you have a client either on a Teams call or Zoom call or in the office, and you can literally model it based on the tax software and say, okay, Doc, if you bought $50,000 of equipment, yeah, you save tax on that. But it also opens up these other deductions. That's what's so cool about the software we have.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to chat about no tax on overtime. There's also no tax on tips, but that doesn't really apply to dentists. But no tax on overtime. So OBBBA, and that's what we call the new tax law, created a new above-the-line deduction of up to $25,000, $12,500 for a single person who gets overtime compensation. Now, doctors, this is not going to involve you. And by the way, I'm going to say disclaimer here. Don Watson and Art Wiederman, as well as Ide Bailey LLP, are not licensed attorneys, and we do not give you legal advice, cannot give you legal advice as to what qualifies under the law for overtime. You need to talk to a labor law attorney as to whether what you're saying qualifies. This is more for your employees. So you're going to have an employee who's going to say, hey, I read about that overtime qualifies. And by the way, we get overtime here. Well, okay, let's see what overtime is defined as. All right. This deduction is for your employees and is for tax years 2025 to 2028. Overtime is defined as qualified compensation defined under, and you might want to write this down, Section 7 of the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. Now, I'm going to turn 66 the day after this podcast comes out, which means I was born in 59, so that was 21 years after this law was passed. I was not around, so I can't tell you what it is. So, you know, again, you have to talk to your labor attorney. Does this qualify? If you have employees who have this, then, and they say, I want to make sure that my W-2 has got this set up so that I get this deduction. That's not your job to do their tax planning. Your job is to talk to your labor attorney and talk to your payroll company about exactly what the law says in your state and to make sure that you follow it. So in order to qualify, employers have to record the qualified overtime on the W-2. There is going to be a line on the W-2 for this specific item. The deduction for employees phases out between, starts at $150,000, phases out at $275,000, and for married starts at $1,275 and phases out at $550,000. The whole point of this is if you get a question from one of your employees and they believe they're entitled to they're getting overtime pay and they want it reported, you need to check with your payroll company and your labor law attorney. That's all I'm going to say. We are not attorneys. We do not give legal advice. Okay. So Don, we got this child tax credit that came back into the law many years ago. What's happening with the child tax credit?
Yeah, the two big things that we always associate with the children are the child tax credit and the care of them, the dependent care deduction. Years ago, it used to be getting exemptions on your return, which were more of a deduction versus a child tax credit always being better. But that's it. There used to be two at one point. Now it's just the credit, no exemption and credit, just the credit. But they've augmented it over time. So what we're seeing now is that the $2,000 number that a lot of people are familiar with will now be $2,200 a plus. There was also, should you not have enough tax to use that credit against, some of it was refundable. This has also been increased from $1,400 being refundable up to $1,700. And again, like most things, for having these benefits running around, if you have an income level of a certain amount, then they begin to phase down. And that's $400,000 for joint and $200,000 for all other taxpayers.
And if you have a bunch of, and you said the only thing that the kids are good for are these things. One other thing is sucking as much money out of your bank account as possible, at least over the first 18 years and maybe longer. But that's another conversation for another day. But anyway, that is something that if you have multiple children, and again, you want to get under those limitations, your income. Because $2,200 a child, you have three or four kids, that could be $8,000-$9,000 in your pocket. And remember, that's a tax credit, doctor. That's not a deduction. A credit is a dollar for dollar reduction of your taxable tax liability, whereas a deduction, you get a percentage of that, 32%, 35%. So a credit is always much better than a deduction. Right. Real quick, the estate and gift tax exclusion. Not a whole lot of us, unless you hit the lottery, are going to qualify for this anymore. Under prior law, it was, if you had an estate of greater than $14 million, $28 million for a couple, you were going to have to pay an estate tax, which very quickly got to the highest rates. That was going to end in 2025 and revert back to $6 or $7 million. Under OBBBA, the annual estate and gift tax exclusion will be set at $15 million per person, so $30 million a couple. One thing you want to do is talk to your estate attorney about using a provision called portability. And that is a provision that's complicated. We're not going to get into it today, but just write down the word portability. Say, I heard this guy named Wiederman talk about portability. What that does is it allows the second spouse who dies to use whatever exemption that you did not use. So let's say that your spouse's estate was $10 million and the exemption's $15 million. There's $5 million didn't get used. If you make a portability election, you can take that $5 million, add it to your $15 million, because maybe you are going to hit the lottery. I don't know. It's something you should be talking to your estate attorney about. All right, we got a lot left and not a lot of time, yeah. So let's run through this. One of the big things that President Trump campaigned on was increasing fossil fuel production in the United States and pulling back on energy incentives, and that's exactly what this law did. So there is a deadline here, folks. You need to write this one. This might be the most important thing we tell you all day today. So, Don, talk about what's going on here.
Yeah, there's a number of things that have been in the law about breaks for getting energy efficient type things. Most people are familiar with the cars. It's things for your house, like a water heater, or the air conditioned HVAC unit, stuff like that. There's putting solar panels on your house, so energy producing efficiently, doing things for commercial versus, you know, your residential. So there's these four or five things that have been out there for a while, but for the most part, these all start phasing out this year as far as being eligible. And by the time we get to the end of the year, most of the things that all of our clients have gotten used to using are probably not going to be in play anymore.
So, yeah, I mean, if you want to buy a hybrid or electric car that qualifies for the clean vehicle credit, which goes as high as $7,500, these are repealed for vehicles acquired after September 30th, 2025. So if we are publishing this podcast on August 13th, under the new math, that's 18 days in August and 30 days in September. You got 48 days, folks.
Make a deal.
If you want to buy one of these cars, to buy one of these cars. And I guarantee you, as this word gets out, the inventory of these cars is going to drop. So if you're thinking about it, you might want to do that. Also, you know, energy efficient home improvement credit, you know, insulation, windows, doors, HVAC. It's not a big credit, but that goes away after 2025. And the residential clean energy credit, think solar panels, folks, on your roof, which was 30%. And I think it dropped down to a little under 30%. And that's repealed at the end of this year. So if you're thinking solar credits, might want to think about getting that done this year. Now, there are really nice credits, which we at Eide Bailey, we have a whole group that does nothing but tax credits. We have a whole group at Eide Bailey that does nothing but everything. It's pretty amazing. Energy efficient commercial building deductions under Section 179D, that goes away with construction that starts after June of 2026. So talk to your contractor about energy efficient stuff. Talk to us about that stuff. All right, here's a big one. Bonus depreciation. Bonus depreciation was phasing out. So Don, talk about what is bonus depreciation? How does it work? And what do my doctors need to know about this for 2025 and going forward?
I think two of the favorite words we hear around tax planning time are bonus depreciation and Section 179.
Exactly.
So bonus depreciation has been around for about 25 years, and it's seen different iterations. But most recently, most related to having a 100% deduction with regards to buying certain types of property. The way it's morphed over the past couple of years is that this was going to phase down to zero and go away completely. In this instance, 40% was our percentage for 2025. It was going to go to 20 next year and then be done. The other thing that changed over time was it used to be on new property. This is when they were trying to incentivize buying new stuff that was being built and created so that we can stimulate the economy. But then they extended it over to used property, new for you, but not new to the public type thing. So somebody else could have, another business could have sold it to you. So what was going to happen now is that they're going to re-extend out to 100% beginning with in 2025. I believe our date is January 19th.
Yep.
So anything after January 19th is now be eligible for bonus. If you bought it before, then you're still stuck with the 40%. And typically it's going to be 20-year and under property. If you're unsure of what meets that requirement, then talk to your CPA about that to make sure you're getting the right deduction and you're not over exaggerating your deduction. But you also have access to Section 179 should bonus not apply. Different limitations, but generally, a full deduction as well.
Yeah. So it's really important, doctors, that when you're doing improvements to your building, you own a building, or you're doing improvements to your suite, that you know what's called a qualified leasehold improvement property item is. Because again, anything that's part of a building, the IRS is going to want you to depreciate that over 39 years. Now, even those of you that just graduated dental school, you're probably not going to be working for 39 years. Maybe you will be, but I wouldn't hold my breath, right? So what qualifies? Land improvements, fences, parking lots, landscaping, interior improvements to non-residential buildings, all right, drywall, ceilings, interior doors, HVAC, plumbing, electrical, carpet, vinyl, tile flooring. Again, I'm back to speed talking again. Specialized electrical or plumbing systems, cabinets, millworks, and counters, window treatments, refrigeration, telecom, data systems, decorative lighting, sizes, and security. So, for example, you want the invoices to say all this stuff. I had a doctor years ago, I've told Don this story, 20 years ago, who got an invoice and said, Art, I built out an office, and the invoice said one lot of leasehold improvements, $400,000. And the guy says, well, what kind of great benefits I get? I get nothing. We got to write this off over 39 years. If I hand this to an IRS agent, you're up the creek without a paddle, which is why you want to be working with your contractor and your architect to make sure that you're allocating a proper amount to modular cabinetry. Now, we know that when you put cabinetry in a dental office, it's bolted into the wall. Can you take it out? Yes. Will you take out half of the wall and half of the building? Yes. But it is modular. You can move it. It qualifies under this. There's a new category of qualified production property, which says if you are producing something that can be provided as a product, well, who knows what the regulations are going to say? You guys all do produce something that's a product, crowns and bridges. And that's a whole nother conversation. I don't know if that's going to qualify. But the bonus depreciation, and Don, talk real quick about what a cost segregation study is. We do these at Eide Bailly. We have a whole group that does them all day long. But talk about how that could save doctors tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes.
Yeah, so kind of dovetailing what Art mentioned, the cost segregation study is about us as accountants not understanding maybe what went into that property because the contractors or you all aren't very familiar with the details of what's involved in the pieces of that construction. So cost segregation helps guide that process to where they can look at that $300,000, $650,000, whatever it is, and identify these kinds of things that are mentioned so that we are not just putting everything into, hey, it's went into the building. It's all 39-year property. That doesn't get you accelerated depreciation. What we want to do is locate and identify what are those fast recoverable items and not 39-year items. And that way, we might be able to shift 15, 25% of that $600,000 being immediately deductible versus having to wait 39 years. But that's where that team has been trained and they have the process to ask the right questions, even get in on the front line before you begin construction. That way you can have the contractor do what they're supposed to do and not try to make it happen after the fact.
Right. And importantly, and again, this podcast will go a little longer than my usual ones. There's just too much information to provide. And doctors, you can listen to it instead of two rides to work, maybe make it three. Don't worry about it. Okay. But Don, talk about S corporation basis. Doctors, if you go ahead and you buy a bunch of equipment at the end of the year, you go out and buy a CEREC machine, a CT machine, a digital scanner, whatever you buy, you spend a couple hundred thousand dollars and you're just expecting to get this huge tax write-off. Talk about if you're an S corporation, which in California, 99% of our clients are, Other states is not as applicable, but a lot of S-Corps around this country that are dentists. Talk about how important it is and how important it is they got to talk to their CPA, talk to us about making sure you have proper S-Corp basis.
Yeah, I always try to akin this to being basically you're running a scorecard of what you're entitled to in your business. You put a dollar in, you're entitled to get a dollar out, came from your pocket. If you make a dollar of income, you pay tax on it. You're entitled to take a dollar out. If that bucket doesn't have anything in it from you, you can't get a benefit. So as Art said, you might get to the end of the year going, oh, gosh, I got $100,000 of income, but you don't have any basis. And we can go through some in another hour of how that could be. But let's say you have no basis, and there's a lot of situations that can occur. Going out and financing from Patterson or Shine or the bank to get that CERIC doesn't automatically give you a $100,000 deduction. You are using somebody else's money. So that unfortunately, under S corporation rules, doesn't count. If you were a Schedule C, sole proprietorship, or partnership, tax law is different. That debt would help you in a different way. But unfortunately, as Art said, most of you all would be S corps in our world, and therefore that situation would not allow you the deduction to bring your income down to zero from $100,000 by simply borrowing the money.
All right. We got two or three topics left that we're going to cover. And so research and development expenditure credits, I'll kind of prompt this by saying when these rules, you know, when I got involved with iBailey and found out they had a whole R&D group, there was all kinds of conversation going on. I said, well, you know, every dentist does research and development because every time they go to make a crown or every time they go to make a bridge or every time they do something on the CERIC machine, that's research and development because it's all new and everything. And everybody was all hot to trot about that. And we had, from the podcast, probably 100 dentists call our R&D department. And they called me up when they said, Art, stop. Stop, please. There's too many people calling. And by the way, the government has come out with new rules. So bottom line, Don, is we believe that most traditional dental practices, even if you have an in-house lab, probably would be pushing the envelope on qualifying for the research credit. However, there are some dentists that are working on inventions and new technologies and whatever. So they went back to 2022, 23, 24. You couldn't expense these deductions, right, Don? You had to take them over 5 years?
That's correct. There was it was kind of a weird rule under Section 174, but yeah, they looked at the expenses that if you were taking the credit, because back then you had credits and then you also had this issue. So they kind of dovetailed in each other. But in many cases, the amount that went into cause the credit was even greater because that code section picked up even additional amounts. Maybe it was additional payroll and stuff like that and supplies. But then you capitalize that number. And if you're talking about a $500,000, $1 million+ number that you were just taking right off the table in that year one, but only getting 1/5 of it or some fraction thereof over the next 5 years, that was a pretty big shift in the expectations of those clients and those taxpayers.
This new law, if those of you who took this, they are allowing you to go back and recapture us. So like, let's take an example, okay? So Dr. Watson's doing a lot of stuff in this podcast. He's doing everything, right? He's developing a new dental device, qualifies for the credit. In 22, 23, and 24, he spent $120,000 in each year doing that. So each year you got $24,000 of amortization, right, Don? 120 divided by 5, right? So for 2022, he took 24,022, 24,023, 24,024. He's got unamortized expenses of 48,000. Under this new rule, you can take this 48,000 in one shot, right?
That's correct. There's a couple actual cures for it, one of which is what you said. You could take it all in the current year. They're going to have a mechanism to do so. I don't know if it requires a particular form that would be called a change in accounting, but it may be something very straightforward that allows you to take the remainder of it in the current tax year. Option two they're talking about is you could go amend returns, but you also had to give consideration to the time and cost involved and how many returns are affected, and it may throw you into a loss or those types of things. You could continue on with the remainder of the five-year amortization. You may find that, hey, this is a great benefit for years to come without having to spend any more dollars. So you may decide, I'm going to take year 2022 out for 1 or 1.5 years, year 2023 out for 3 years, and so on and so forth, and just have those layers benefit you further on. So it's going to be a case-by-case basis of what the amounts are and which option would be the best for you.
Yeah, we're not gonna see a lot of doctors, but it's gonna cover. I got two more things to cover.
That's right.
Employee retention tax credit. I lived that for 2 years. We got over 125 practices. I think we got $6 or $8 million of ERC all legally. Well, there are a lot of people out there who were unscrupulous promoters who said, if you're breathing, you get the ERC. It's not quite that simple. So here's what this new rule did. If you filed an ERTC claim on wages paid after June 30th of 2021, and you filed the claim after January of 2024, you will not be allowed to have this claim be paid, and no refunds will be processed after July 4th of 2025. The IRS has extended their statute of limitations from 5 years to 6 years for promoters to $1,000 per occurrence. Doctors, I talked to our tax controversy group, and Ben Peeler is as good as it gets. He was with the IRS for many, many years. He was telling me, this was about a year ago, that the IRS is gathering the names of these promoters, and they have already started going after them and demanding their client lists for people that they knew were advising people to take the ERTC when they weren't legally allowed. The IRS has ramped up their resources to go after illegal ERC claims in going after these promoters who told unknowing businesses that they incorrectly filed for the credit. Now, what's happening, Don, as you and I have seen on our ADCPA blog, is the IRS has been holding up making payments on these ERCs because they put a hold on it. They were investigating. They held them for 2 or 3 years. Now they're paying. And now the promoters who did these unscrupulous, incorrect things, claims, are saying, oh, well, we want to get paid, because they weren't going to get paid until they were done. And now they're hearing, these people are hearing from their CPAs, people like us, no, we want to return this money. We don't want this money. And the promoter's going, oh, we don't care what you're doing. We want to get paid. It's getting ugly out there, folks. So you need to talk to a tax attorney or somebody. We have a group that handled ERC. We can help you with that. But that's what's going on with the ERC. And they are definitely not. The government is taking no prisoners on this. Absolutely not. So last thing we'll talk about, and then we'll put a bow on this. I know we went a little longer than we should, but there's just too much stuff to cover. As part of the, so there's some changes in 1099 reporting. Don, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, two main areas. The 1099Ks, which some of you know are related to the credit card transactions. About 4 or 5 years ago, that administration wanted to have these reportings come out regardless of the activity. Now it's going to have a little bit more of a floor limitation before it has to be done, just because there would be too many otherwise. So when there's more than $20,000 sent out from an organization and had more than 200 separate transactions, that will cause an issuance of that form. Otherwise, you may not get one. And the other one has to do with the 1099 miscellaneous and NECs. This amount of $600 that you're all familiar with, that's been around, gosh, high 3/4 of a century now, is finally changing from $600 to $2,000. This will be for payments beginning in 2026.
Yeah.
And which means you'll be making the reporting in January of 27. So this year, you need to still make sure that you, your accountants, are working with that $600 number and report that out. Always keep in mind, whether you give out a 1099 or you think you're supposed to be the recipient, those dollars are always taxable in any event anyway. The reporting just helps the IRS know the flow of that money, so you get your deduction if you're the giver of the money and knows where to look for it on the other side. But it doesn't mean the recipient of dollars for services should not be picking that up as income.
And we know that never happens, right? Okay, we'll move on.
Never.
So, never. So, all right, let's put a bow on this because we've run a little over our time.
Yep.
Takeaways from this this legislation, doctors, work with your CPA to reduce your adjusted gross income to take advantage of the 199A pass-through deduction, the child credit. We didn't talk about the qualified car loan interest deduction. We just didn't have time. Deduction on overtime and tips if you're non-dentist spouse. You know, maybe you have a non-dentist spouse who works in hospitality and receives tips and things like that. There's a $25,000 deduction for that. The senior tax deduction, the SALT debt deduction. Time your itemized deductions correctly. Make sure that you use 25 versus 26 in making best use of the SALT deduction, standard deduction, and plan your equipment purchases to make sure you get the 100% bonus depreciation. And the most important thing, if you are not getting a CPA who is being proactive and talking to you about all this stuff, give Don a call. Don, I mean, I've worked with Don now ever since I merged my CPA firm with our HMWC in Tustin. I met Don the minute I met him after we stopped talking about football. It was obvious to me that he is at the top of the class as a tax professional. He knows his stuff really, really well. Don, if anybody has any questions about any of this, they want to run by you, obviously our clients are welcome to call us all the time, but if you're not a client, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah. Again, my, direct line here at the office is 657-279-3273, or you can reach out to me through my email, which is dwatson@oddbailey.com.
All right. Hey, Don, hang with me as I take the podcast out.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging with me on a Friday afternoon. And we gave a lot of really good information and tips on this podcast, which I'm really proud of. And folks, again, thank you for the honor and the privilege of listening and being part of my podcast. We've got thousands of people that listen to this podcast every month. It's a joy. December will be 7 years that I've done this. We're well into the mid-200s as far as how many episodes we've done. Please subscribe to the podcast if you don't through, Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Tell your friends about the podcasts. We've had doctors who've said, gee, Art, I saved a bunch of money because I listened to A, B, and C about all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So please do that. Give our friends at Decisions in Dentistry magazine a look, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 CE courses at a very reasonable price. Take a look at their DDS Media Pro company. Great in the dental marketing field. Some, amazing stuff that they're doing. Please be sure if you're interested in our Business of Dentistry webinars coming up in September and November, email me at awiederman@idbailey.com. Call me 657-279-3243. We'll get you registered. These are going to be through the Harbor, Orange County, and San Gabriel Valley Dental Societies here in Southern California. If you go onto their websites, they will have a QR code that you can register for. And with that, folks, thank you for the honor and privilege of your time. Again, I hope this information has been helpful. Call your CPA. If you don't have a good CPA, take a look at Ide Bailey. And with that, I want to thank you again. And that is it for this episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@idebailey.com. That's awiederman at eidebailly.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.